The failed attempt to blow up a U.S.-bound passenger airplane on December 25th has raised questions about the need for the introduction of full-body scanners at all major airports. But it is very controversial. In a moment, one of Linda Moulton Howe's topics, full-body scanners on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Once a month, Linda Moulton Howe comes to the program with a series of special reports, and she's got some dandies for you tonight. Hey, Linda, how are you?
Good.
Good to talk with you again.
Well, yes, and it was just a month ago. It's hard to believe that Christmas was only about 30 days ago.
Seems like forever this time, doesn't it?
No, and that was the day that a Nigerian terrorist went aboard Northwest Airlines Flight 253 with 80 grams of PETN explosive powder sewed into the crotch of his underwear.
Oh, my, yeah. What a story.
You've seen the photos in it, Earth Files right now. I have a photograph that ABC News got that shows that underwear laid out and where this explosive 80 grams was right sewn right into the crotch.
Unbelievable.
Well, passengers heard a loud popping sound like a firecracker, and they saw smoke coming from the Nigerian's lap, who apparently tried to ignite the PETN to blast a hole in the plane, sacrificing himself and all the passengers aboard. But fortunately, he didn't set off much except his skin and the underwear.
Yeah.
Now, PETN is an explosive chemical that experts say is more sensitive than dynamite usually to shock or friction. And since metal detectors could not pick up PETN, the proposal to put more full-body scanners into domestic and international airports has become a hot, controversial topic. Full-body scanners operate with terahertz, or people call it T-ray, radiation. Now, that word tera refers to a trillion cycles per second of a frequency that can see through clothes. So there is a privacy issue, a radiation safety issue, and the big money question. Should the U.S. Transportation Security Administration spend even more taxpayers' dollars to buy expensive full-body scanners and to train people to run them? Tonight, I'm going to concentrate only on the radiation safety issue. Terahertz radiation is emitted by all matter, but it's not visible to human eyes. T-rays moving at a trillion cycles per second can go through everything except metal and water. T-rays are considered to be safer than X-rays. By the first week of January 2010, after this underwear bomber attempt, emails began circulating on the internet with subject lines such as, quote, "Airport full-body scanners destroy DNA," close quote. And the subject was a theoretical paper by a physicist with a recent PhD named Boyan Alexandrov. He submitted the paper that was co-authored with several others to the Journal of Physics Letters on October 28, 2009. And one of the summary sentences in his paper said, quote, "Based on our results, we argue that a specific terahertz radiation exposure might significantly affect the natural dynamics of DNA and thereby influence intricate molecular processes involved in gene expression and DNA replication," close quote. Well, people who were looking at Dr. Alexandrov's paper included MIT's prestigious technical review, and they commented, quote, "Alexandrov and company have created a model to investigate how terahertz fields interact with double-stranded DNA, and what they've found is remarkable. They say that although the forces generated are tiny, resonant effects allow terahertz waves to unzip double-stranded DNA, creating bubbles in the double strand that could significantly interfere with processes such as gene expression and DNA replication. That is a jaw-dropping conclusion," close quote, MIT. Well, I'm looking at all this, And I'm thinking, I just don't think that this makes sense, that something operating in trillions of cycles per second is going to stop at DNA.
Right.
So to get a reality check about this terahertz radiation impact on DNA and how safe would full-body scanners be at airports, I called Philip Hannawalt, PhD. He is the Morris Herstein Professor of Biology at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Professor Hannawalt discovered repair replication of damaged DNA as far back as 1963. He is the co-discoverer of what is called the ubiquitous process of DNA excision repair. DNA repair is the process by which all living cells in humans and everything else deal with damage to their genetic material. He is one of the most respected people in the world in the field of DNA impact and repair. Here now is Professor Hannawalt from Stanford.
Okay, here we go.
The so-called terahertz radiation is found in the region between microwaves and infrared. It is highly penetrant radiation, but its effect would be considered less than that of microwaves. Microwaves, unless you have a high dose, you don't detect significant effect. The same could be said for terahertz, and from everything I've read, it takes relatively high intensities and long exposures to see an effect of terahertz radiation on living cells. And the most recent papers that I've looked at, one of them from Radiation Research Journal in 2008, in which they show that terahertz radiation can cause genomic instability in human lymphocytes. However, to see an effect, they have to administer the radiation for a long time. They look at an hour was the shortest time they expose the cells, 2 hours, 24 hours, they see some chromosomal effects. Some of these could be due to simple general heating that you would find, say, for infrared. The main consideration is whether the exposure is for a significant period and whether the level of intensity of the radiation is high.
And right now, it's your understanding that the body scanners that are out there using terahertz radiation in airports, that the average passenger is going to be inside of those body scanners for
seconds.
Yeah, or even up to a minute, but that would not constitute damage to DNA.
That would be my considered opinion.
Now, could you please give us a perspective on this paper from the physicist at Los Alamos National Lab, which has been circulated on the internet in December to January? This is the paper by Boyan Alexandrov.
Yes.
And he works in the Division of Condensed Matter Physics at Los Alamos. And his paper was circulated around saying that airport full body scanners could potentially, the word was destroy, but his paper, as I understand it, was talking about, quote, unzipping, close quote, of DNA. Could you please address this whole idea?
Okay. First of all, there is no paper I've seen anywhere that shows that terahertz radiation causes DNA to so-called unzip. By unzipping, he means DNA is a two-stranded molecule. It carries the essential genetic information, and it's a double helical molecule. Two strands are wound about each other, and they are complementary to each other, which means that if you pull them apart, you can use each strand to make its new complement, and that is the way the molecule replicates. What he is claiming is that terahertz radiation can cause this molecule to unwind, and so the strands separate. If that were true, that could be a problem in that if you unwind the molecule, then the strands are more accessible to some kinds of damage that can alter the DNA. However, the paper that is referred to is a theoretical paper. There is no experimental data in the paper.
And from your understanding of the frequencies in which terahertz would operate between infrared and microwave, the skin below clothing would stop this frequency from penetrating through the skin?
No, actually, the radiation penetrates right through. Long wavelengths will pass through much easier than short wavelengths. So it'll pass right through, but passing through does not mean that it is doing damage on the way. Radiation that goes through unaltered has not done anything. In the case of this terahertz radiation, essentially all of it goes through the body, but it is delayed going through more solid material. So when it comes to bone, it doesn't go through as rapidly or as completely as if you have soft tissue. And so you see the outline of the bone in the body. You also would see the outline of something unusual, like a bag of a chemical, anything dense that you had. So the way it would be used in a scanner is that you would see an unusual object imposed on the rough skeleton of the individual.
In January of 2010, it's your understanding that the use of body scanners in airports using terahertz radiation, in which the passenger is exposed for, say, maybe up to a minute, that cannot...
From my understanding at this point, I would say that there is not a concern. Say you're a frequent traveler, so you're going through these every 2 or 3 days. You're not talking about 10 minutes or certainly not talking about an hour. It does come to a rather basic rule of genetic toxicology, and that is it's the dose that makes the poison. The effect of something that can damage you depends upon how much of it you are exposed to.
The bottom line is, on airport body scanners, the people can right now ignore any of the web headlines about body scanners destroying DNA or unzipping DNA.
Not be concerned.
Okay.
The basis for this lack of concern on my part is, first, that the studies that show that there's any detectable effect at all on living cells, in particular human cells, have been done with large doses of terahertz radiation and exposure for long periods of time.
And that would include the work of Boyan Alexandrov at Los Alamos?
Yes. Again, he has not done experimental work on cells. He refers to work that other people have done. He's a theoretical physicist, and he speculates about what this can do based on a model for thermal noise, essentially, that could cause transient changes in the structure of DNA.
So there is no hard laboratory evidence of the bubbling and the unzipping of DNA?
No, not by terahertz radiation. But what I do not know is, for the actual instrument, what is the wavelength? To my mind, it doesn't make a lot of difference because neither extreme would be a significant concern. It's somewhere within a range in which I would not expect significant biological effects.
Now, George, I think that should make all of our Coast listeners feel better if we do end up having to go through body scanners, that within the minute or so that we would be exposed in an airport, there is no danger at all.
What if we fly 100 times, in a year? What do you think? If it's a cumulative type effect?
The DNA is in the process of always repairing itself. So you are in the focus of damage would be if you were exposed inside and kept inside of a scanner for an hour or two at one time.
Yeah.
Okay. But over 365 days going on 50 trips in which you might be in one of those a minute each trip, over 365 days is still not, as far as I understand and Professor Hannah Walt understands, that would not be considered danger to the DNA.
And I guess they wouldn't make us go through it twice like they do through these regular scanners in case, the alarm goes off. Once you're in it, they know what they're looking at, right?
Well, you would hope.
Yeah.
And the terahertz is so much less dangerous than X-ray. And there is another very important point about all of this story and the way this has been evolving in just 1 month. And that was that soon after Christmas Day and the underwear bomber scare, Michael Chertoff, who was the head of the Department of Homeland Security under the George Bush administration, was on a series of TV shows. And he was outed in the process of being on TV. He did not say this himself. It was the Washington Post and the Washington Examiner who reported that he is now the current lobbyist for a company called Rapiscan. And with a price tag of $25 million each, Rapiscan is selling these full-body machines and saying that the ones they're selling obscure human private parts during scans, that's their plus. Well, what's called flyersrights.org protested, and this is a quote, this was in an interview also on television, Mr. Chertoff should not be allowed to abuse the trust the public has placed in him as a former public servant to privately gain from the sale of full-body scanners under the pretense that the scanners would have detected this particular type of underwear explosive, close quote. The Washington Post reported that Rapiscan has already sold 150 full-body scanners to the TSA that budgeted $300 million for the see-through clothes technology. So out of this month of questions about are the body scanners safe, would they have caught this guy? And should we be spending money on them? What has come out of all of this is that a man who was the head of Homeland Security is now a lobbyist to sell full body scanners.
Amazing. Amazing. And I've got a simple solution too, Linda. They check every bag and we all fly nude.
Well, I personally think that the people I've heard making the most sense are the ones who said, this guy should have been on all of the intelligence agencies' top possible potential terrorist list. And if they had not had 500,000 that were jamming computers and that they had had a precise list based on all of those warnings by even his own father, then he would have been caught or stopped before he ever got to an airport. And I think everyone agrees that has to be beefed up. The whole idea now of the intelligence agencies getting these guys before they ever get to body scanners.
Up next, Linda reports on death stars, supernova, and gamma ray bursts on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, it's time for our traditional shout-out, and thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations across North America, hello. StringLink members, thanks for all you do. And XM Satellite Channel 165, the various chat rooms and groups. Of course, our friends at thenighthawkzone.com. Hello to you, and Moondog, we're glad you're recuperating there. Imaginative Worlds into Infinity. National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, the MySpace groups, what's left of my space groups, Yahoo Chat, our Twitter group, Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group as well, Above Top Secret. Thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Linda Moulton-Howe. Linda's website, earthfiles.com. And this segment, Death Stars. This is serious stuff, Linda.
Yes, it is. And it's as if we are now going from airport and body scanners and terahertz radiation out about 1,000 parsecs from the Earth to where gamma ray radiation could blast away, let's say, from a white dwarf, and could that gamma ray radiation at about 1,000 parsecs, which is about 3,000 light years, could interact with Earth.
That's all we need.
This was the most dramatic headline in the January 5th issue of Scientific American. It said, quote, supernova star too close for comfort to Earth. And the subject is a binary white dwarf named T. Pixidus, and that T refers to a scale of brightness. It's rapidly rotating around a companion star, and it is about 1,000 parsecs from Earth. And Scientific American reported, quote, astronomers have identified a ticking time bomb in space that lies perilously close to the Earth. The star called T. Pixidus looks set to explode as a supernova with the force of 20 billion, billion, billion megatons of TNT. And new measurements suggest that T. Pixidus might be even a little less than 1,000 parsecs, close enough in cosmic terms for a blast to have a possibly devastating impact on our planet, close quote, Scientific American. Well, I wanted to talk with the lead author about this. And so I went to Professor Edward Sion, PhD. He's professor of astronomy and astrophysics at Villanova University in Radnor, Pennsylvania. He presented this research on January 5th at the recent American Astronomical Society meeting in Washington, D.C. And his last summary slide stated, quote, the white dwarf in T. Pixidus is increasing in mass, soon to reach what is called the Chandrasekhar limit of 1.4 solar masses. The distance to T. Pixidus is closer than 1,000 parsecs, a type 1A supernova exploding within 1,000 parsecs of Earth will greatly affect our planet, close quote. Even if that white dwarf, T. Pixidus, blew to smithereens right now in a type 1A supernova, Earth scientists would not know for about 3,000 years because that gamma ray radiation travels at the speed of light. But since our solar system is in the Milky Way galaxy filled with potential supernovae and even much bigger gamma ray bursts from much larger dying stardust, could we be hit by a blast of gamma rays large enough to knock out our ozone layer?
Mm-hmm.
If that happened, George, all surface Earth life, including humans, would be exposed to deadly UV and gamma ray energies no longer blocked by the protective ozone layer. And has that happened before to our planet?
Bet it has.
And cause one or more of the half dozen extinction events that mark the life and death evolution of this planet? Well, there appears to be some evidence that the answer to that question might be at least one yes. First, I talked with Professor Sion about his T. Pixidus research, and then I called Professor Adrian Malott, professor of astronomy and astrophysics at the University of Kansas in Lawrence. He hypothesizes that Earth's Ordovician extinctions 440 million years ago had all the earmarks of strong gamma ray radiation, perhaps from a massive dying star more than 20 solar masses in size, that emitted what is called a gamma ray burst. And it's so interesting because in that Ordovician extinction, it killed mostly plankton and other near surface life of the oceans only in the southern hemisphere of our planet. And you will hear Dr. Malott talking about this fascinating theory. But first, here is Professor Edward Sion from Villanova University.
And a supernova explosion is 1 million to 10 million times more powerful than a classical nova explosion. If a type 1A supernova occurs close enough to Earth, the input of gamma rays and X-rays could have a significant effect on the ozone layer,
leaving surface life vulnerable to solar radiation and X-rays.
Exactly.
I'm wondering, has anyone speculated about whether such a gamma ray radiation burst could explain periodic extinctions?
Yes. There is a professor at the University of Kansas, Adrian Malott, who has published extensively on this possibility in terms of gamma ray bursts possibly triggering the mass extinctions in the Ordovician period.
Adrian Malott, PhD, is professor of physics and astronomy at the University of Kansas in Lawrence, where he has worked since 1986 after earning his PhD in physics from the University of Texas. In 2003, Professor Malott posed the question to his astronomy colleagues, what would gamma ray radiation from a supernova or large gamma ray burst do to Earth? Is there any extinction event in Earth's history that might have been caused by intense gamma ray radiation hitting Earth? Here now is Professor Malott from the University of Kansas.
One of the things we realized was that most of the radiation effects would be shielded by water, and just a very short depth would be pretty good protection. And so the Ordovician extinction had this odd characteristic that basically only things that floated on top of the water or had larvae that lived in shallow water were affected by this extinction. So the Ordovician extinction might fit. We noticed another characteristic. This extinction was accompanied by glaciers, by an ice age that came on suddenly and went away suddenly without repeating. And that's another thing that we thought might be a side effect of such a burst.
Now, why would gamma ray radiation reaching the Earth cause an ice age?
One of the things it does is the radiation breaks open chemical bonds that are normally too strong to be broken.
You mean the ozone layer?
This radiation can break that bond, and so now you have atomic nitrogen, and you can make all kinds of compounds that are normally present in low abundance. And one of them is nitrogen dioxide, NO2. It's a catalyst for the destruction of ozone. The other is that it's kind of brown in color. It's the thing that gives smog its sort of tea brown color. And we thought that there might be enough shielding of radiation from the Earth reaching the Earth's surface that it would cool the climate.
So that combination of water surface life being destroyed and a sudden ice age, those are the two main ingredients for looking at the Ordovician as being caused by gamma ray radiation reaching Earth.
That's right. That was our initial motivation.
How close to our solar system would that have to be in order to cause this kind of an extinction event?
I believe most of the calculations we've done have been for a gamma ray burst 2,000 parsecs away, 2 kiloparsecs. We think that's close enough that could give rise to a gamma ray burst that could damage the Earth severely.
Could you explain 10 parsecs and 100 parsecs?
Now, a supernova is a different thing. Only a very, very small fraction of supernovae give rise to gamma ray bursts. But a supernova at 10 parsecs could do similar damage. Both of these things, supernovae at 10 parsecs, gamma ray bursts at 2,000, are things that are likely to have happened once or twice, maybe, in the last, say, 500 or 600 million years. Which is the length of time for which we have a decent fossil record.
And that the Ordovician right now is at the top of your list as possibly having the earmarks of at least a gamma ray burst But let me get clarification on that type 1A supernova, the white dwarf Tpixidis. What is the radiation that is given off by a type 1A supernova?
They give off a wide variety of radiation, but they're not beamed. That's the difference. A gamma ray burst emits more radiation and has that radiation focused in a narrow beam, which you might get hit by and do damage from a large distance. Supernova at 2,000 parsecs is, or even 1,000, there would be a bright star in the sky and a small increase in cosmic rays, but nothing serious.
So from 1,000 parsecs down to 100 parsecs or 10 parsecs, if there was a white dwarf type 1A supernova at 10 parsecs or 100 parsecs, what would happen?
Well, at 10 parsecs, you'd have an extinction event comparable to what I discussed for the Ordovician extinction, or gamma ray burst. At 100 parsecs, you might have you'd have an extremely bright star in the sky. Probably see it in the daytime. You'd probably get some ozone layer depletion, enough to make people worry about skin cancer and so forth, but not the kind of thing that would lead to extinctions.
Now, why is it that a gamma ray burst is focused in a narrow beam compared to a supernova?
Well, gamma ray bursts, most of the long bursts, which are the more powerful kind, are thought to originate from very, very massive stars, like 30 solar masses, which are spinning very fast. And when they explode, there's a kind of a donut-shaped accretion disk of gas around them, and basically nearly all the energy escapes perpendicular to the donut hole in narrow beams.
The narrow beam that has to do with the dynamics of the spinning star is what produces a focus that could interact with Earth.
Right, if it's pointed at us.
Okay. And right now, as we enter into 2010, are there any star-like objects in our galaxy within 10 parsecs or 100 parsecs that might turn into a gamma burst or a supernova?
Not that I know of.
Since we're talking about light years and events that could take place right now, this very hour that we're talking, it would take 1,000 or 2,000 years to reach the Earth. Is there the possibility that there could be an intense gamma radiation burst that would hit the Earth that we did not know was coming?
Sure. All these signals travel at the speed of light, so you don't see it till it gets here.
And do we have any machinery, satellite, that is constantly monitoring for gamma ray radiation? And would we know, in time to alert? I don't know. That's the question.
Not from that kind of monitoring, because you don't know it's here till it's here. The only thing you can do is you might see a star that you think is on the verge of exploding or doing something. There is a star called WR104, which some people argued might possibly give rise to a gamma ray burst.
How far from Earth?
2,000 or 3,000 parsecs, and might be pointed at us, might not. A supernova would have to be within about 10 parsecs to do that kind of damage. A gamma ray burst could do it from much further away. I don't think there's any supernova candidate close. A gamma ray burst is harder to spot. WR104 might give rise to one.
Mm-hmm. So anything from 2,000 parsecs toward our solar system, if it's a gamma ray burst from a large spinning star, could do damage. And supernova within 10 to 100 parsecs from our solar system could do damage.
Right.
What do you think the chances are that a sudden burst of gamma ray radiation could be picked up by instruments headed toward our solar system and Earth from a gamma ray burst or a supernova that we were not aware of?
As a supernova, I'm not worried about it at all because there's nothing close enough to hurt us. As a gamma ray burst, It could happen, but it could happen so that we don't know it's coming. But such an event probably only happens on a scale of tens of millions of years. So it's incredibly unlikely.
Meaning that the size of suns that would be at the end of their life and would be spinning and cause these beams of gamma ray radiation that would be close enough to hurt Earth, that it is both the distance of them and the frequency of them that keeps this from happening very often.
Right, right.
So, George, in a way, it's like one body of this science research that was reported in Washington and was headlined by Scientific American about T. Pixidus is at about 1,000 parsecs, and Professor Malott thinks that that's too far and that he would not expect the gamma radiation from a T1A supernova at T. Pixidus to do damage at Earth. Other scientists are not so sure.
Right.
So this is the kind of cosmic universe issue that we don't have any control over, and it probably did happen in the Ordovician. That probably would explain the strange surface water life extinction. And if it's happened once, it could happen again. And the reason I think to report this and listen to scientists is that there are feature films out there like 2012 showing the Earth falling apart, when it is probably more likely that there might be an astronomical event if there's going to be anything. And it would be totally nonviolent if it was radiation from something like a gamma ray burst.
What do you think the odds of an asteroid versus a Death Star burst? What do you think?
Well, just on the frequency, you know, there's many more pieces of asteroid that are coming by the planet all the time. Versus, as he was saying, if there was a large gamma ray burst and it's close enough, that may happen only every 300, 400, 500 million years. So the fact that there are meteorites out there, and some of them might be a half mile, and they think a half mile would do a pretty good dent on this planet in terms of the dust in the atmosphere and the nuclear winter is the byproduct of a meteorite strike. If it's large enough, that would plunge the Earth into no light and what Carl Sagan always referred to as something like a nuclear winter. But I think that it's helpful to me to understand we're in a universe that is constantly changing and has a lot of violence in it. But when you talk with scientists who spend their lives studying it, and they say, I'm really not worried about a supernova because there's nothing that close enough.
Yeah.
But a gamma ray burst, which doesn't happen very often and would have to be at 2,000 parsecs, that could happen, and we probably wouldn't know when it hit us. Well, that's a piece of data about this universe we're in, but it doesn't make me worried. It makes me fascinated about this amazing cosmos.
Up next, of course, Linda will talk about high UFO strangeness in Scotland of a very incredible case that occurred in 1996. And it was all entitled UFO Case Files of Scotland in a 2009 book. So Linda will be up next with more on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.